got it. Here we go. On a Friday, that means no Tom. Let me just make sure. Hold on one second. I don't want to leave him hanging. Nope. No Tom. Over the other one, let's see who my lucky co-host. Oh, I haven't seen my Dixie Chicken in a long time. How are you there?
Hello, my Tennessee Lamb.
There we
go.
That's how you do it. Running around on me there. You're going out with Tom and Jack Stein, the whole getting hanging out with the Motley crew there. So I've
been getting around a little bit.
Yeah, good. Okay. Hey, Chris Martin, in here. Boy, we have the, is this the B team, the C team? What do you consider yourself right now, Chris?
Kind of a B+.
B+ team. All right, let's get into it. Here we go. Let's see, the more than 2,000 Snohomish County students quarantined due to COVID-19. So that's good for the parents that are trying to get back to work.
Despite that large number, 2,000 students in quarantine.
Yeah. Is it quarantine happening there at your house? Is that an ambulance in the background? Is that,
well, you know, I live in the high crime area, that'll happen from time to time.
All right, hang on.
The silver lining of that is that there are just under 200,000 K-12 students in Snohomish County. So this is roughly 1-2% of those students out due to COVID quarantines. That means the other, 98% of students should still be in class.
Okay, so we're going to take 2,000 of them and they're going to go home for what, like 10 or 15 days or something like that? Then they're going to go back in again. And then somebody's going to find a case of somebody that has COVID, and then they're going to send everybody back home again. Is this just going to be the on and off throughout the entire year so parents can never really get back into the swing of things, I assume?
It seems like that's it. They had something called 2,000 close contacts, and that's when people, are on a sports team together or they're sitting next to somebody. I mean, this is with both teachers and students.
Uh-huh.
So, I think what the health officer is trying to say is that, it's a relatively low amount considering that there are, 200,000 kids and they have 367 confirmed or probable COVID cases. I'm not sure what a probable COVID case is when you have a test for it.
I don't know either, but I decided to look at the Department of Health, and I have no life, and I found that's what I found on the website, that I have no life. I'm there looking at the screen, I'm seeing my own face like, what a loser I am. So I wanted to see the statistics from last year. So this I looked up, so if anybody that cares, this is from August 1st, 2020 to April 30th, 2021. And I know schools were remote and then back and forth and some were hybrid, blah, blah, blah. But altogether, I looked at, so this is before we got the vaccine, and I went to see how many cases there were, how many kids went into the hospital, how many people died, because ultimately, really, this is about people not dying, right?
Mm-hmm.
From that time, and this is teachers and students, hospitalization, total amount, 11. Most of those were, in fact, they all were administrators or teachers. Number of deaths, 0. That's number of hospitalizations is 1% of the total amount. And looking at the percentages from kids and everything else, what they've learned, if you look at Sweden, Sweden's a great test for us. Sweden looks at it and says, yes, the kids can get it. You have to watch the one word that the media likes to do, which is transmit or infect. There is a difference between the two. You can transmit it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you infected somebody. You'll see them use that word back and forth in various ways. The piece in the New York Times that Reason dug into is like to scare the hell out of everybody to think it's all transmitting. There's transmitting an infection, completely different, but don't let them do that to you. In this case, so 2,000 kids will go home in Snohomish, and then I guess they'll go back to school again. I assume the people at home that they're going home to are also vaccinated, or do they possibly get transmitted and infected at home? This is just going to be an ongoing story that eventually we'll stop doing because it becomes so mind-numbingly boring. Anything that you'd seen in here that sparked your interest?
Well, in this Reason piece that I was looking at, I think it's interesting, and I think you'll like these numbers. In 2017-2018, the flu, okay, during flu season, killed 172 children in 5 months. COVID has killed 146 since April. So I think we are sort of chasing our tails here in that people are going to continue, like you said, this whole thing of a kid's going to get exposed and then he's going to go home. And then the family has to quarantine as well. And then there has to be, you know, and then what if he gets exposed again? These are just close contacts, right? These aren't necessarily any kind of infection. So how many times could that happen? You could have five kids out there, right, that just get exposed to this and they have to quarantine how many times?
Right.
I mean, when's it going to stop?
Right. And then it interferes with the general flow of the kid's life, which is to go to class, be in class, hang out with his friends. The chances of him, what are we ultimately trying to do? Stop all transmission? You'll never do that. Want to flatten the curve? Did it. Want to stop overrunning hospitals? Get more staff in there. Trying to stop death? Okay, well, there you go. Now, that is something that you could look into. So, okay, how can you do to stop death? So, we got vaccines. Great, good. Get a vaccine. Great. 6 foot distance, all that other stuff. Arbitrary numbers coming up with, whether it's 6 feet or 3 feet, doing everything you're supposed to do. The more likely that somebody's going to get into a car accident and die than go to school and die. But overall, what are you trying to do? This is an example. Sending these 2,000 kids home. So all of a sudden, the parent gets a note, your kid comes home. It's Wednesday. Now the kid's home for what, 11 days, 15 days? Is the mom going to school? Is the mom going to work? Is the dad going to work? Who's staying home with that kid? Now it interferes and interrupts the general flow again of the economy and people's lives. What are you trying to do? Save the teachers? Teachers get vaccinated. Great. If you get vaccinated, chance of you having a breakthrough case, you can have a breakthrough case. Chance of you going to the hospital becomes slimmer. Chance of you dying even more slimmer still. So overall, we'll see this go over and over and over again. And then ultimately, at some point, someone will come to their senses. But yeah, if you look at the number of kids that die of flu compared to the kids that die of this thing, and the interesting thing about the flu, it's not necessarily killing kids with comorbidity. Sometimes you get a flu, get dehydrated, and the kid goes downhill super duper fast. I don't know if I told you the story. On New Year's or Christmas Day, we were up in Canada. We had gone up to Canada because we had heard about this like magical place up in Banff that we were going to do Banff Springs Hotel, and we're going to stay there, and the kids are going to have this magical Christmas. And we got on a waiting list. It took 2 years to get there. When you arrive in this beautiful little cabin, you put out and you let the people know the size of your kid's shoes, and magically skates appear. Mm-hmm. And then the night before Christmas, brown packages appear with a string, tied with string, and it's special things letting you know that Santa will be coming soon, that Santa has found your house ahead of time. And then there's cookies and candy, and Santa comes, and a sleigh ride goes by. I mean, it is, because I love Christmas. I don't want to tell you how much money I spent on this. It is magical.
Mm-hmm.
Truly magical. We wake up Christmas morning and Charlie says, "Hey, it looks like Santa brought Rye a bunch of red dots." Rye's face was covered in red dots. His whole body.
No.
You take his shirt off, red dots. He's got a fever. He's listless. I'm like, geez, this is really weird. We drive him down into town. And of course, it's Christmas Day. There's a teeny tiny little hospital down there. And he's in there seeing the physician. The little blue drape is closed between the two of us. There's one kid in one room, Rye's in another. Doctor comes around the corner, very sober look on his face, and he says, "I have called for a helicopter to take your son to Edmonton's Children's Hospital." And I said, "Our kid's over here in this room." He goes, "Yeah." I said, no, not that room, this room. This is our kid right here." "Yeah, your kid has viral pneumonia with something else that's causing his lungs to collapse."
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my. I think I've told the story one other time. Have you ever heard this?
Wow.
I'll stop right now, Chris. Have I ever told you this story?
No, I've never heard this.
So I said, "We're talking about Rye Curly, the little 18-month-old. "Yeah, we don't know what it is. It's some sort of bacteria or virus. We can't figure out what it is. I don't have the testing here. This is a really small hospital." I said, "Okay, so the helicopter's going to come." So then the helicopter circles, and then the helicopter pulls back away again. The guy says, "It's too snowy for the helicopter, so I've asked for an airplane." So the airplane circles. We can see them circling. We can hear them circling. We're in an ambulance outside where the hotel or the hospital is. There's a little landing strip there. And the airplane starts to descend and then pulls back up and pulls away. And with that, the ambulance says, "We're going to have to drive." And it's a 5-hour drive.
Oh.
And I got my kid in the car, in the ambulance, and I said, "Lace, I'll go with him. You follow behind with Charlie in the other car on Christmas Day." And we're driving and driving and driving in this blowing blizzard snow. And they have this little thing on his thumb, which gives you the oxygen intake. And his oxygen should be around 96 to 98 for a little kid. And it's dropping rapidly. And the guy, the driver, looks back at the other attendant who's sitting with me as we're rocking back and forth across this highway heading to the Edmonton Children's Hospital at 50 miles an hour as fast as we could go in this snowstorm. And the man sitting next to me says, I have to intubate him. You got to pull over. And the driver says, if I pull over, we won't be able to get started again. He goes, I got to intubate him. And for that, he reaches under the drawer between his legs, and there's all of these medical devices. I recognize them. I used to sell them. And I can see they're made by Hudson. And the intubator he has, the thing that you stick in the throat, is actually for pediatric. It's not an infant. And I said to him, you can't put that down his throat. You'll break his neck. He says, I don't have anything else. And he screams at the driver to pull over, stop. I have to intubate him, and I can't do it with you sliding all over the road. Can you hold his head? I said, you're not sticking that down his throat. And he says, I got to ask you to calm down. I said, it is Christmas Day and my son will not die in the back of this ambulance. With that, the guy says, I'm going to turn around. And he takes the ambulance and he drives it down into the embankment, up over the other side. And we go to this little town. And the two of them are like, goodbye. And they roll us into this other crappy little hotel and a hospital. And we get in there, and the guy says to me, there's nothing I can do for your kid. We're going to just try to get him some oxygen, but his lungs are collapsing. They're filling up with fluids. And I'm telling you, Sherry, like, I'm sitting there watching him die, and I'm like, God, on Christmas Day, really, God, you're going to do this to me? And all of a sudden, through the doors, bam, it is the Edmonton Children's Hospital resuscitation team, or whatever they are. There's like seven of them. They come flying through this gigantic stretcher with all these machines on top, and they pick him up and they just plop him down like a doll on the thing. And he, are you his grandfather? I said, and you know what's funny is, upset as I was still deeply insulted that he thought I was the grandfather. I said, are you the nurse?
Vanity rules.
I hit him with, are you the nurse? No, I'm a doctor. Oh, okay. Well, you know what? I'm not the grandfather. Establish that right now. He says, okay, so we're going to do this and this and this and this. We got your kid. He's okay. So with that, I got in the back ambulance. We drove into the Edmonds Hospital. The doctor in the back, they save him right there in the hospital. I mean, right there in the back of the ambulance. It is amazing. The guy said to me, you have to understand, with kids, little kids, they're good, 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 good. They're good, 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 good. And then what happens? They go, phew, they just decline straight down. Their blood oxygen's fine, and all of a sudden, they're gone. They're just, and then that's it. He says adults come in for a slow glide if they're going to go downhill fast. They don't go downhill fast. They slowly begin to decline. Lose blood pressure, things like that. Kids are good, and then boom, they come down hard. Beauty thing. Absolutely amazing. It's Christmas night. There we are. I sleep in the bathtub of the hospital room, and Rye gets better. And it's a story that we tell over and over again. And Rye's like, I don't remember 1 minute of it. And I remember trying to get my money back at the hotel, and they're like, no, I hope you had a great Christmas. Yeah, it was terrific. Overall, the best news was I got a chance to also be charged $35,000 for an airplane that never landed and a helicopter that circled twice. So that's what you get for those two things. By the way, it's good news for you, Sherry. I know you want to come here to Washington, at least to Oregon, and go kiss somebody, because that's coming back again. And Oregon has now determined that you can make out if you'd like, if you are in Oregon.
Yes, that's right. If you are in Oregon, then you are able to kiss freely. Now, remember, that was not the case I don't know how many months ago, when shower curtains were in style and people were doing all kinds of things.
Why don't you explain to everybody shower curtains being in style? Because you don't want to just throw that out there, right, willy-nilly.
Well, it was a suggestion by the health department that instead of taking a chance and getting COVID from your partner because of the very, very close contact, mm-hmm. that what you do is you purchase a shower curtain, you put that between you, and then perhaps you make certain adjustments to the shower curtain so things can happen with the shower curtain in place.
Uh-huh.
Does that clear?
No.
Okay. Should I be more specific?
If you could, I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, obviously we get it. As you like to point out, you know, don't take any chances. Get two shower curtains in case one falls away.
Somebody's really ugly.
You can come back to Oregon and make out again. I thought Oregon also had the rules when you had to have a mask outside.
Well, Oregon's pretty strict, and they said previously you are your safest sex partner. That was their slogan before. This was last year. Mm-hmm. And that kissing can easily pass COVID-19. You should avoid kissing. You should avoid all that. They're still giving out a few dating tips. For instance, why don't you meet outside? That would be better. Mm-hmm. If somebody has symptoms, postpone for 10 days. I can't imagine anybody postponing and then going back to that date. Can you? If you say, oh, I think I might have COVID. Yeah, I'll see you in 10 days. I'll never see you again. I mean, that's the
end of that. Wait. Go back. Oregon's thing was, you are your best dating partner?
You are your safest sex partner.
Okay.
You are your safest sex partner.
I see. So if you got on an app and it was pictures of yourself, you would just be swiping onto yourself?
You'd be swiping onto yourself. You would be sending yourselves like kind of dirty text messages. Yeah, you'd do all of that stuff. Why not?
Good to know. Good to know.
But yeah, you can kiss again in Oregon, so all is well with the world.
There used to be a kissing class. We went to do the story at Evening Magazine. It was on, because people never really learned how to kiss. They would like practice on their arm or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to go shoot this class. It was in Capitol Hill. And it was so gross because the camera, we had to get right in close. And these people are, there's stray hairs and things on between the people's lips. And we're shooting this video. And it just was so disturbing to watch. Like, normally you watch people kiss. It's like beautiful people, like movie star people, right?
Yeah.
And you only see the back of their head. But like, we were close up on their weird little lip areas with the cracks between the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but wait a minute. So did you have to bring your own partner to the class, or did you just hook up with somebody that was already in the class?
Oh, no. You came in with somebody.
I was going to say, gross. Well, it's a class, so you're practicing with someone you already know? I mean, aren't you already doing that?
And then, no, because you just might not be doing it. And then the instructor had to come around, like, okay, let's take a look. Oh, whole thing was just bizarre. Golly.
Oh, boy. All right,
Tracy.
Did you try
it? That's where I met Tracy Taylor for the first time.
Yeah.
We went to do that story. We interviewed her. She was great.
That would be a big no.
No.
On that one.
There we go. Keel Mortgage. Thanks a lot for sponsoring the Tom and Curly Show. Keel Mortgage, the best in the business. Lower Keel and everybody there. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Normally, I'd be pressing the button. Hannah Scott would come on. And Hannah, Sherry, would be talking about landlords and the recent stuff coming out of Seattle. And I thought, you know what? We'll just cut right to the chase. Brett Waller is the guy that Hannah often talks to. Brett is the one that represents the landlords. And he is the director of government affairs, basically meaning he spends half of his time fighting traffic, going to Olympia, and then looking for a parking spot, going in through the rain, and then walking around the halls trying to get people to listen to the mom and pa landlords, and that is your job and the cross that you bear. So, Brett, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, thanks. I know that you're talking to us from your quote-unquote cabin somewhere, so you're on a vacation or whatever. You're taking an early weekend, so even better, you get extra credit for that. So what is the last thing that came out of the city council? Was that it's the because it's hard to keep track of everything. What's some of the ones that you're looking at that you're like, oh, no?
Where do I start?
Okay.
The most recent bill that they passed was the school year eviction ban that applies to any individual who has a child in school or a person who works for the school district or for a school, primary K-12 type school.
Okay.
And that passed, and they just prevented evictions. Without any compensation, not providing any rental assistance or the opportunity to access rental assistance to really fix the problem that exists when you have a non-payment of rent situation.
So wait a minute. So a mom, let's assume she's single mom, she's got two kids going to the and they're going to school. They're in eighth grade and fourth grade or something. What you're saying is that they cannot be evicted from the apartment because they've got school age kids?
Correct. Yeah. And we know that with just $2,000 in rental assistance, we can save a tenancy and make that tenancy whole and stable over a year period of time. So we just really need to focus on rental assistance.
Sherry?
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, Brett, I remember that story. Didn't that also extend to anyone in the school. So, for instance, if you're a cafeteria worker, if you're a janitor, if you're in the school at all, that you would be protected from eviction.
It does, yes.
Okay. All right, so that's if you got a kid in school, and you're saying with $2,000 eviction money, meaning that you guys there at the Multiple Family Housing Association can get access to cash to be able to make that individual, the tenant, whole with the landlord and avoid the whole eviction thing.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, just getting that $2,000 in cash on average will keep a family stable for 95% of the time over a year period of time.
Okay. So rather than coming down with this draconian thing, if you've got a kid in school, you can't be evicted, why don't they stay on the main road, which is to get the money from, how hard is it to get the money? Is it difficult to access that money to clear the debt for the landlord?
Certainly revenue can be an issue. I think we are a sympathetic villain. It may be the best term out there. There's a lot of focus on landlords and housing right now, and that's why the council has returned with two more bills that'll be up on Monday.
Okay.
About rent increases that make it just more challenging to operate rental housing in the city of Seattle.
And what is the next one on your hit list that you really seem to be enjoying?
So the next two bills are, one requires 180 days notice for rent increases. Mm-hmm. And accompanying that is that if you increase the rent by more than 10%, the landlord is required to pay 3 months of that average rent to the tenant if they move.
So they're actually paying the tenant to move. They're covering their moving costs, essentially.
Well, the city is requiring the landlord to pay that money. So it's really a tax or a fee on the landlord to operate their business and to cover their operating expenses.
Okay. So 50% of the apartments that are available in the city of Seattle are owned by what would be considered ma and pa, right? Not big conglomerates,
right.
Not out-of-state corporations. So if they want to raise the rent and they want to raise it 10%, and a big part of the chunk – and I think you sent this to me one time, that of the dollar that is paid by the tenant to the landlord, what percent is actually going into the pocket of the landlord?
Well, on average, it's about 10 cents of every dollar goes into the pocket of the landlord. 90 cents of every dollar goes towards the operating costs of the property. And when you look at a property, you have to estimate what the taxes are going to be for next year. There's an incredible shortage of labor right now in the rental property market. And mm-hmm. So wages are very competitive, and that's making it very difficult for affordable housing providers, particularly, to keep up with the market conditions with the inability to raise rent and the challenges around raising rent in affordable communities to maintain the competitiveness of employee wages and also the maintenance of communities.
I don't understand. Ultimately, it seems, as I think I said to you, I sent you a text message the other day, that the scene from this novel that I was reading once about this guy swinging the poker around the living room, swinging at ghosts, and he's smashing and crashing everything from the library to the chairs, all the china, everything completely and absolutely destroyed. And the person walks back in and says, did you get the ghost? And he says, I certainly hope so. To me, it likes the city council here in Seattle swinging this poker wildly at, as you say, the villains, which are the landlords, to try to stop at every single turn and to protect the tenant. And ultimately what they'll end up doing is driving more and more apartments away. More and more landlords will leave because they're making it virtually impossible to be able to run a business. So then what happens down the road, Brett?
Well, I mean, landlords look to mitigate their risk, and they do that in a number of ways. They look at their screening criteria, or they sell their property to get out of the market, and that becomes a homeowner type of of a property. And they do other things. Everything that the city council has done, you know, arguably has not stabilized the housing market in the city of Seattle. It's only made it worse. So what we need to do is really focus on real solutions to fix Seattle's housing crisis.
So, Brett, according to this article in the Seattle Times, 86,000 renters are behind on their rent right now. Where does the eviction what is the status of that now? If that many people are behind and the money, everybody's still waiting for some of the pandemic money or some of the other money to come in to give to these landlords, are they now able to evict these people that, say, haven't paid in months and months and months?
No. The short answer is no. You know, what's really frustrating about that number that you just gave me is that it's not actually 60,000 renters in Seattle who are behind in their rent. The United States Census has done a household pulse survey for about 37 weeks across the country. And the household pulse survey surveys and provides a lot of different data sets about health and education, uh-huh. food security, and of course, housing. In the housing piece, they do a number of different data sets. And one of them is the ability to pay last month's rent. In that, they survey about 2,500 renters across the entire state of Washington and then extrapolate this data. So it's really an estimation. And the best way to look at that is through percentages. Mm-hmm. The other piece is that they look at Washington state as a whole, and they look at the Seattle metro area, which includes Seattle, Bellevue, and Tacoma. Arguably, it also includes Snohomish County, which is part of the metropolitan statistical area. So it's not just Seattle. Yeah. And what we're seeing is 7.5% of renters are behind in their rent, which is consistent with what it was, what was happening prior to COVID.
Prior to. Yeah. Yeah. That certainly illuminates the story and puts it in a different context. Brett Weller, thanks for taking some time out of your early weekend to shed some light and to hear from the other side. We'll tell Hannah Scott you said hi.
Thank you.
Keep up the fight for rational work between tenants and landlords. It shouldn't be so acrimonious. Thanks, Brett. Appreciate that. All right, here we go. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You text as well at 98973. Sherry in for Tom, because that is the way it works on Fridays. I'm looking up Kim Kardashian West. How many people follow her on Instagram? Oh. She only has 255 million followers.
Oh, loser.
Yeah. My kids, when I first went on Instagram a long time ago, I don't do anything on it now. They're like, Dad, whatever you do, don't follow too many people. I said, why? That's the worst. So you look at it. She's got 255 million people follow her. She follows 150. So I guess it really means something to be followed by Kim Kardashian. Now, the reason she's in the news is because Kim Kardashian will be hosting Saturday Night Live coming up, the beginning of the season? Or when do they have her scheduled? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
And people. Deborah Messing from what show was that she was on?
She was on, what was her sitcom?
Come on.
Oh, I know. I didn't watch it. You know, the one with the guy.
The guy and then Will and Grace.
Will and Grace. There you go. Thank you. Yeah. So she was on Will and Grace. And she's
you almost
a little
turned
bit
into
upset.
Your mom there for a minute.
I know
the guy with the thing. He's got the thing and then he does that thing with the things.
The other day she said something to me like, who's the guy that plays on that show? What? Anyway, Kim Kardashian, by the way, is on October 10th, I believe.
Okay.
So Deborah Messing is upset about this, and she tweeted out something like, she said, why Kim Kardashian? I mean, I know she's a cultural icon, but SNL has hosts who are performers who are there to promote a film or TV. Am I missing something? And people, somebody wrote back and said, yeah, like the last 40 years, dummy. So she is a little bit upset about it. She also had a tweet when Elon Musk was hosting, and she said, it's always been a dream of mine to host SNL. Seeing Elon Musk have that privilege hurts my heart. So Deborah Messing, not happy about it, but SNL is doing this. I mean, this is what they do. They have athletes. They've got, you know, people like Elon Musk, people that have, like you said, a huge following on social media. They're not just looking for comedians anymore. They don't do that. They get as many people as they can. They need all the help they can get.
Yeah.
So they're going to get anybody.
And don't be Deborah Messing and ask a question on the internet like, why then? Because that just opens you up to have everybody go after you. and just make fun of you. Is she saying this because she wants to be on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, she said it's always been a dream of hers to do that. This isn't the first time that Deborah Messing has got into a little a tweet thing.
Uh-huh.
When she really, really wanted to be Lucy in, I think it's something called like Meet the Ricardos or something. It's a biopic about I Love Lucy, about Lucy and Desi Arnaz.
Uh-huh.
And she had played a role. She had played, you know, that Vegemite vitamin thing, that famous scene that Lucille Ball did.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she drank too much. And she got drunk and drank too much. And then,
Deborah Messing did a reenactment of that of sorts on Will and Grace one time. And she was really good and she really looked like Lucy. So when they announced that Nicole Kidman was going to be Lucy in this biopic, she really got upset about it. So I think she turns to Twitter to sort of air her frustrations about her own career. But nobody's having it.
Yeah, don't do that. But listen, how many people are going to tune in to watch? But most people don't even watch Saturday Night Live on Saturday. They watch it Monday morning where people share it online or something like that. And Kim Kardashian will probably be horrible. They'll make a bunch of jokes about her, I assume.
Right.
And then it'll be shared in 1 minute and 30 seconds or 2 or 2:30. And that's what it's going to be, because Saturday Night Live realizes over-the-air broadcasting is not where it is. So, you know, sorry, Deborah, but nice try. Will you be tuning in on at 11:30 to be watching Kim Kardashian?
I will not. Will you?
No, I will. I'll be missing that one until she starts following me, until she has 151 followers. I'm holding
out.
There
you go.
All right. By the way, is that her rear end? Is that her rear end?
There's much debate about that. You know, people said that she might have gotten implants or whatever. So I only she knows. I mean, she's had her share of work done. So it's possible, you know, it could be the only natural thing on her.
Okay. Thank you. Tracy Taylor, you're going to weigh in on that? Is that her rear end?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Too many squats, maybe. I don't know.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.